we have to segment out one little piece of evidence at a time to explore this history of the Americas, because there's so much available. If you take it all at once, it's too much to assimilate all at the same time.
Tell us this story. How were they found, first of all?
Well, first of all, the Michigan tablets, they have been finding artifacts in these mounds, these man-made mounds, since the 1850s. Our country's not that old. We're talking about the people leaving the East Coast and heading west somewhere around 1840, 1850s, and venturing into these wildernesses. These man-made, to give you some sort of numerical idea of what we're talking about here, between the borders of Canada and the Gulf of Mexico and the East Coast and just west of the Mississippi, there are 100,000, or at least were at one time, 100,000 man-made mounds. That's an awfully lot.
That's a lot, Glenn.
That's more than are found in Egypt. That's more than are found in Egypt and the entire Middle East put together. And we don't know any of the story of these mounds. Now, there are two basic types of mounds that are found in this region. One of the mounds, there are some aberrations to this, but there are basically two types. One is a flat-top mound that looks like a raised stage, like they had built a temple or a building on top of it, or were using it for some sort of public communication or ceremonial purposes.
Right.
They didn't find any bones in these kind of mounds. The other kind of mound is a very rounded mound that was obviously a burial mound, because they found a lot of bones, and this is where you find the artifacts. In one of eight of those mounds that were rounded, they have found artifacts over the centuries, over the last century.
And Glenn, the significance of this, of course, a number of things. First of all, how ancient are they? How did they get there? Who made them? How was the traveling? I mean, if, for example, they're Egyptian, and that's possible, we'll talk about that in a second, that means they could have come over here when? Thousands of years ago?
We know that the records and the archaeology and anthropology of the Americas is every bit as old as that is in Africa. If you only include those ancestral forms that belong in our genealogical record, obviously Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon man are not our direct ancestors, and scientists have proved that with DNA technology at this point in time. But for those ancestors, the bones that have actually been found that have been proven to be in our lineage, we have the bones in Chile and in the Americas that are every bit as old as those in Africa and in the Far East. So obviously, there were people here in this part of the world simultaneously with people in that part of the world. And whether we like it or whether we don't, or whether we acknowledge it or whether we don't, they had communication with each other and there was interchange between the two of them. As a matter of fact, there was a merchant relationship, and we're going to show that tonight on the radio.
If it's, let's say, Egyptian or even any type of era way gone back, how in the heck did they get here, Glenn? Could these small boats have gotten them across the ocean?
Well, we presume that the state of technology of ocean craft is evolved to the state of the Renaissance period of time, where the clipper ships were built. But I'm going to tell you that the capability of ocean travel was greater, historically speaking, as far back as 1800 years BC than it was at the time of the Renaissance period of time. As a matter of fact, to illustrate this point, the Phoenician vessels, when they docked with these Michigan copper tablets off the coast of Alexandria, they're just in at the Nile Delta region, the Phoenicians wouldn't even allow the boats to come to shore. They wouldn't allow any of the purchasers of the copper to visit the boats. They did not want to have anybody see their technology, because that was the secret to gaining wealth. It was the ability to sail the oceans of the world that was their secret. You know, we have Pythagorean's theorem, which was a secret. But by the time of Jesus, the greatest secret in the world was that you could travel 40 times farther in a boat in a day than you could by a caravan, and it would cost you one-third the price to transport goods from one place to another. So the boats, the technology, we're thinking about the boats being the same as those that Christopher Columbus used, the
right.
Nina, Pina, and the Santa Maria, which were little teeny tiny little vessels that scurried across the ocean and risked the ocean waves. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about seaworthy craft across the oceans. And by the way, even if there is some suspect about the capability of the construction of these vessels, if you go to England, then you go on to Iceland, then you go on to Greenland, then you come down through Nova Scotia into the Americas, you're only talking about 300 miles at a whack, roughly, distance between each of those land ports. So we're talking about really being able to follow a land mapping situation. And by the way, the maps now that are pre-Columbian, first of all, our good friend Gunnar Thompson, you're going to have him on the air someday. This man is absolutely amazing. He's written a new book called The Secret Voyages.
Sure.
Contains nine of the voyages to the Americas. Nine of them.
way before Christopher Columbus, right?
Way before Christ.
Oh, my gosh.
He talks about people coming here for various and sundry reasons. And, by the way, he was a protege of Thor Heyerdahl, who wrote the book Kon-Tiki. I'm sure you're aware of him. He was
sure.
He was a protege of him and began his diffusionism philosophies back when he studied with Thor Heyerdahl. And he's also spent the last considerable period of time in Beijing, China, convincing the Chinese government that their maps of the world were real. The pre-Columbian maps that they had in their libraries were real. And he was successful at doing that. He's got this new book out that's on my website, a very limited printing. Secret Voyages, it's absolutely stunningly sensational. And the one thing that's good about Gunnar is the fact that he writes so that everyone can understand it.